From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 708, Tuning Home Wi-Fi with guest Ryan Woodings, recorded Friday, June 19th, 2020. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts, LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. And my guest today is Ryan Woodings, who founded MetaGeek back in 2005 to create tools for visualizing Wi-Fi, such as the Wi-Spy Spectrum Analyzer. And for the past 15 years, he's been helping MetaGeek create tools for helping businesses and home users troubleshoot their Wi-Fi. And since the beginning of COVID-19, Ryan's been focused on how to help home users manage their Wi-Fi for remote work, remote school, remote social life, remote everything. And when he's not elbow deep in Wi-Fi, he's baking or in the mountains of the Boise foothills. Welcome, sir.
Thanks, Richard.
And I've been to Boise, beautiful part of the world. You know, it's Idaho's gorgeous.
Thanks. Yeah, I love it here.
A little drier. I mean, I'm on the coast where it's wet, but you know, we're all kind of Northwesterners here. You're just on the other side of the ridge.
Yep.
I know your products and I recommend them heartily. I think you guys do a great job of tuning up enterprise Wi-Fi.
Thank you.
But I guess that's just not your problem right now.
No, it's not at all. I mean, nobody's in the office these days.
Yeah,
nobody's in the office, the restaurants, the hotels. And that was our bread and butter, is managing Wi-Fi and providing tools for managing Wi-Fi in all those places where people used to congregate.
Yeah. And just this constant, that holds the whole hotspot mapping, like just so you end up with too many people on a node. Like it makes more sense to increase your nodes in a given area. Moving off onto different channels when you see the conflicts, like that's the stuff that I thought that Wi-Spy always did a good job of, just saying, here's where you're conflicting.
Yeah. And for, you know, 15 years, that was our bread and butter, was that kind of thing. It's like, here's your conflicting, here's your high density, here's how you can change channels to avoid all the other Wi-Fi that's around you. And a lot of that was geared towards, you know, dense places with a lot of people or people moving in and out really, really often, like classrooms and auditoriums, places like that.
A lot of transient. But we've done a whole series of shows on this pandemic series around the things you need to know for work from home. And the number of IT folks I've talked to where it's like the home internet and home Wi-Fi is just not up for it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even in my case, I mean, my home Wi-Fi was using just the standard DSL modem. It was an okay one. I think it had 11ac. And it's in the home office downstairs in the corner.
Right. Provided by the ISP. Like you just literally, this is what came in the box.
Yeah, it was just provided by the ISP. And it was like, it wasn't worth it for me to upgrade. It was fine. But all of a sudden, you know, I'm online on calls. My wife's online on calls. And our kids are upstairs trying to have a Google Meet with 20 other first graders.
Sure.
And it doesn't work. It just could not keep up. So about week two of the pandemic, I ordered from Office Depot a new mesh system. And the Office Depot here in Boise has curbside pickup, so do the curbside pickup and everything. But I mean, it was the emergency even for me to say, "Oh, my home Wi-Fi is just not going to work."
Yeah, is that the ultimate solution? I have definitely heard we're turning up the pipes a bit. I talked to an IT fellow who was remoting into some of his staff's machines so that he could get access to their access points to use quality of service settings in a router to turn down, you know, Call of Duty and turn up Zoom and Skype and things like that. I just don't know is it just you have to replace the access points, like go to a better system in a home?
Well, I mean, in a lot of cases, the default, you know, ISP provided systems is not going to be up to speed, especially on bigger houses. That's where the mesh definitely helps, just getting up signal strength throughout the house. Now, if your son's on Call of Duty and there's other issues with bandwidth, those are things where, like you're saying, the QoS and everything like that comes into play, where you just don't have enough pipe for all of the things you're trying to do.
Right. Yeah. And Wi-Fi won't save you there.
No. So Wi-Fi is definitely a part of that puzzle. and all these different parts need to work together with, you know, who's using your bandwidth, how's your signal strength and your signal quality to your access point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, is the average mortal going to be able to set up mesh? It just seems like it's beyond a lot of people. That's not a trivial thing to make work.
I was pleasantly surprised at how easy the TP-Link system was. The TP-Link system that I'm using, it's a Deco M4. It was pretty smooth in setting up. And I think that most remote workers could set it up. Now, you get to the issues of after that, once it's set up, is your Wi-Fi still working? Is it functioning? Are you getting swamped by your neighbors? A lot of the mesh systems don't give you very much configurability.
Right.
And so you only have a couple different dials that you can turn. And so knowing which dial you should turn and how you should set it up to be the best, that's where I think we have to do better tools. And that's where MetaGeek is trying to focus right now, is how do we help all these home users that are, you know, they're smart, savvy people, but they just don't know Wi-Fi. And they don't have any visibility into the Wi-Fi to even know what to do, right? So if I'm on a Zoom call and all of a sudden it's just chunky and it's not working, what's the problem? Is it my Wi-Fi? Is it the internet's having a bad day? Is it, you know, my son on Call of Duty? What's going on?
Yeah, all of those things are possible, right?
Yeah, all of those are possible. And the problem today wasn't the problem yesterday, right? So the problems are changing. So being able to provide tools to help provide that visibility and give suggestions for what's wrong is where we're trying to go.
Yeah, I mean, certainly there's the easy thing of try your machine that's plugged into the cache, and so you've got the Wi-Fi out of the loop. At least give yourself some sense that that it is your Wi-Fi that's struggling versus it's your internet connection itself.
Yep.
But when it is the problem with the Wi-Fi, what next?
Yeah, so one of the obvious, or where the first things I would do is see if you're on using 2.4 gigahertz or 5 gigahertz.
Right.
Most access points are all dual band, and a lot of times the client will choose 2.4 gigahertz. And one issue is it's usually the client's choice. The client decides who it's going to connect to.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them will say, oh, I have a little bit better signal from 2.4 gigahertz. Let me choose that. Well, 2.4 is clogged. It's kind of a cluster. And your maximum data rates are not going to be nearly as high as the 5 gigahertz anyway.
Right.
And so I've seen a lot of times where your laptop will just stick to that 2.4 gigahertz access point and it won't switch. So the first things I would do is say, if you can do different SSIDs for 2.4 and 5 gigahertz and have the 5 gigahertz as your primary, that will help in a lot of cases.
Yeah, because I think the Ubiquiti guys push on the idea of one SSID that does both. Like, that's sort of their default behavior.
Yep, and a lot of systems do that. And right. they try to pride their access point can help steer. And there is some band steering where the access points try to force the clients to 5 gigahertz.
Right.
But it doesn't work all the time. The clients are still trying to get to 2.4. And your clients just aren't that smart. If this is the issue for you, then splitting the SSIDs into two separate SSIDs, then you can take more control
right.
over your Wi-Fi and say, no, really connect the 5 gigahertz only.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, if 5 gigahertz will move more data and it tends to be less used, but it is lower penetrating, right? Like, you have more trouble getting through walls.
Yeah, it's a little bit lower penetrating. Mm-hmm. And in most cases, those other things you mentioned, like higher bandwidth and just less people using any specific channel, will overcome that penetration.
Yeah. And by that, you're meaning not only just in the household, because there's lots of hardware that only has 2.4 support, but it's the neighbors too.
Right. And it's all the neighbors. And so a lot of times I'll see 2.4 gigahertz channel will have, you know, say 10 or 15 different access points on that one channel.
Right.
Well, in 5 gigahertz, there's one or two
right.
on the channel. And partially just because 5 gigahertz has anywhere from like 10 to 20 channels that are available. Some of the middle channels have issues with weather radar, and so they're not always available, but there's still a lot more channels than 5 gigahertz that are available anywhere than there are in 2.4.
Yeah. So that, and it's certainly for work machines or for the PCs, they almost certainly are laptops, they support 5. So you're going to have the biggest bang for your buck there and leave the smaller devices down on 2.4.
Yep. Leave the smaller devices down on 2.4. And if you have issues with like your son on Call of Duty, well, maybe he's on the 2.4 too. So
yeah, well, quite possibly. I mean, it's a great case to be made for it. Now is a time for running a few more wires, even if you do have to run them down the stairs kind of thing. Like the wired connection eliminates some problems.
Yeah. Yeah. My sure is I actually did that in my office. I mean, because I have my main modem about 10 feet from my desk. And so I just wired my laptop in. You know, it's one less thing that's on the Wi-Fi so that the other things on the Wi-Fi can have more of that bandwidth.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a great thought. You know, you maybe don't want to work down where the access point is or where the router is, but if it gives you working bandwidth, that's pretty compelling.
Yep.
So take your stuff off the Wi-Fi, not a bad answer either.
Yeah.
Or running a cable up the stairs, like 100-foot roll of finished Cat 6 cable. It's just not that expensive.
Right. It's just not that expensive. And these days, it's like, well, you're working from home, you're doing all this stuff, and all your lives are changed. And so maybe having that cable run through your house is just not a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, it's
at least to have that initial productivity. Now, is there an argument for buying these higher end access points that have a little more steering and smarts and mesh capabilities? I mean, it's several $100s. Like, they're not that cheap.
Some of them get very expensive. Mm-hmm. Some of the systems get down to about $100 for like maybe like two nodes. And that's pretty good. I don't think that the AX systems, Wi-Fi 6 systems, are worth it right now.
Right.
Like, I don't think you need to go that far up there, up the, just because most of your clients won't have those capabilities either.
Right.
But I would say if you don't have 11AC or Wi-Fi 5 from your ISP provided system, that you should upgrade.
Right.
AC is just...
I'm just thinking about the support kits that we sent out when people went to work from home.
Uh-huh.
And it was a lot of webcams and headsets and sometimes machines and so forth. But the idea that $100 access point would make the difference, that they could be more productive, that's probably worth it. It doesn't take very many hours of increased productivity where it's like it was worth sending an access point home. Although that does also mean installing it, turning off the Wi-Fi on the ISP router, which is not always a trivial effort. Like, there's a bunch of things you got to do to make that work.
Yeah. And that's where a lot of corporate IT can help with some things in the home, mm-hmm. right? Like setting up the VPN, different things, but that only works if you can get connected to the machine.
Right.
And so that's where a lot of these Wi-Fi things, like, well, how do we help the corporate IT get connected to the machine so they can do the rest of their support that they can do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, well, yeah,
it's very interesting.
I mean, we've had the good luck of Runaz has been around long enough, like pretty much we've been around the whole advent of Wi-Fi. And, you know, back in the old days, you could change the antennas on an access point. So, sending more expensive, larger duck antennas made a difference. So you get better reception from that. But I don't know that modern access points even look like that. MIMO seems to be the way to go. It's lots of little antennas rather than a couple of big ones.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, or you'll see these like Netgear Nighthawks, so like 8 different antennas sticking out.
Yeah.
And they're just monsters.
That looks like an alien.
Yeah. And, most of them have, multiple antennas inside the box. And they're all positioned certain ways mm-hmm. to kind of get the best coverage. And like you said, with the MIMO, where the antennas need to be pointing in different directions or have different polarity type things. So you can just swap out those antennas with a different antenna because they're all kind of work together as a system.
Yeah, that seems that method goes away. If I have some flexibility in a house for where to put an access point, do you have recommendations? Where's the ideal spot in a house for an access point?
It's one of two places, I would say, either in the middle or wherever you're working, as close to where you're working as possible.
Right.
If you're not working in the middle. And, because your Wi-Fi data rates are going to decline the farther away you get from that access point.
Right.
And so, if you can get close to the access point, that's definitely the best. But if you're working from anywhere in the house, I would definitely say the middle. Now, the thing is, a lot of times you can't do that because, they punch a hole through your wall for the DSL or the cable coming in, and then they install it right there, right at the wall.
Yeah.
And so one thing with cable is you can get MoCA extenders, and those work fairly well, although they're also expensive. And that kind of uses the old coax cable in your house to run it's kind of like Ethernet over coax.
Hmm.
And so you can plop an access point on the other side of your house. If you had an older house that has, all the coax built in and everything.
Yeah.
So that's an option too.
Yeah. If there's wire in the walls that you can use. Although
yep.
The quality of old wire, often it's like you may be introducing more problems for yourself than you're solving. It really depends on how good the wire is.
Yeah, that's true. And I think the MoCA extenders are costing at least $100. So in a lot of cases, the mesh Wi-Fi is going to be cheaper or about as expensive, but less hassle.
Yeah. Yeah, and so with a mesh Wi-Fi, we would have a better primary access point down by the router, and then a couple of these remote modules. And for a couple of $100, you don't have any extra wires run around. You boosted your signal. You're probably in good shape.
Yeah, yeah. I think it solves most of the common mm-hmm. problems right there.
Yeah, and if you want to spend even less, it's like buy a long spool of Cat 5. and an inexpensive access point and move it closer to the middle of the house and live with having a wire strung along.
Yep, yep.
That's a couple of interesting choices.
Yeah, that brings up an interesting topic too, on that we're going back to like kind of the sun playing Call of Duty and trying to do some kind of poor man's QoS. Mm-hmm. If you don't have good QoS system, well, if you can put them on a different Wi-Fi, then maybe you can get them, throttle them a little bit more on the bandwidth that they're taking.
Interesting.
And so, yeah, maybe putting in a cheap access point that doesn't have good capabilities. So, you know, they just can't take that much of your outgoing bandwidth either.
Right.
And force them to use that access point. Those are some kind of, I know, poor man's ways to do some QoS in your house.
Well, and plus, now you're talking about a cheap, like a $30, $40 access point. Like, it's just not that much money, and it would offload some of that work, and you don't have to do all the complicated, clever stuff.
Yep. Or turn on the built-in Wi-Fi and the DSL modem and say, okay, you get the 2.4 gigahertz
right
on this kind of crappy old one, and that will limit your bandwidth pretty effectively.
Yeah. No, that's a great call. Use that on a different frequency, using only 2.4, and then set up 5 for work-related stuff, and keep your passwords to yourself.
Right.
And Ryan, I'm going to interrupt for one moment for this very important message. Working from home could be the new normal for some or all of your company. Working from home could be good for end users, but it's going to be tough on you in IT. Don't panic. You've got Policy Pack, but you're going to need a few new tricks to handle the change. So learn from Jeremy Moskowitz, 15-time Microsoft Enterprise Mobility MVP awardee and founder of Policy Pack Software. In a new webinar, you can learn practical tips and tricks for this new reality of remote work with Windows 10. You'll learn how Policy Pack keeps your Windows 10 operating system, apps, users, and browsers standardized and secure, all while removing admin rights and stopping ransomware and unknownware. Learn how Policy Pack works alongside the tech you have today, like Active Directory and Group Policy, VPN connections, and virtual desktop. And learn how Policy Pack can enhance and accelerate any future-facing plans, such as Windows Virtual Desktop and an MDM solution, such as Microsoft Endpoint Manager or VMware Workplace One. If handling the working-from-home tsunami is now on your plate, you owe it to yourself to learn a shortcut to make the transition to the remote work easier. Sign up for the webinar with Jeremy and get a jump start in handling the change with remote work. Sign up at policypack.com/remote work. That's policypack.com/remote work. Policy Pack, securing your standards. And we're back. It's Run As Radio. I'm Richard Campbell, and that's Ryan Woodings. And from MetaGeek and all of this fancy enterprise, you know, configuring of Wi-Fi, just not that important these days, but getting home Wi-Fi to run well can make a huge difference for folks to try and get that settled in properly. What about conflicts with neighbors? I mean, you would hope that gear is smart enough to just use other channels, but I don't think that's the case.
It's not the case. And a lot of times, some of these routers that try to be smart and pick their own channel will pick channels, especially in 2.4 gigahertz, that overlap. Mm-hmm. So in 2.4 gigahertz, they named the channels very unfortunately. Channel 1 and channel 6 and channels 11 don't overlap. But all the channel numbering is only 5 megahertz apart, but a channel is 20 megahertz wide. So channels 2, 3, and 4 overlap with channel 1.
Okay.
So, yeah, so what you get is most people should be on channel 1, but some routers will pick channel 2 or channel 3, which overlaps with channels 1 and 6 and all the other channels in the middle. And so the problem with that is now they can't cooperate. Wi-Fi is built to be able to cooperate. Say, hey, I'm going to talk now. Everybody else shut up. But if you're off channel, you know, 5, 10 megahertz, you can't hear that cooperation. And so they just sort of conflict with each other and you get retransmission issues, a lot of other issues with these like overlapping channels because they didn't pick the right channel. Mm-hmm. And so Netgear is really bad at this. They pick channel 3 all the time. and so these are just problems where then you have your neighbors on this weird channel and no matter where you go, you can't get around them.
Right.
They're going to be stomping on you no matter what. And so it's pretty bad. That's another reason to go to 5 gigahertz. But
yeah, get away from that.
Yeah, get away from that. And so usually 5 gigahertz, you can find a channel that's free of neighbors. But if you're like in an apartment building or something like that, it's just all on top of each other. So
no, I've had a friend of mine send me a picture of his cell phone looking for Wi-Fi nodes in his building, and it's like 60.
Right? Yeah, it's just so much.
There are no good signals at that point.
Nope, there aren't. And so you just got to... One thing that's helpful, and I wrote a blog post about this at the beginning, was sort of like how to be a good neighbor in Wi-Fi. Because now that everybody's Wi-Fi is essential, what can you do to help your neighbor's Wi-Fi be a little bit better too? And it was kind of like, you know, pick a standard channel. N2.4, that's one channels 1, 6, or 11. Turn down your power if you can, so you're not just like stomping everything.
Slamming people, yeah.
Yeah, and 5 gigahertz, you have the option of how wide the channel you want to use, so 20, 40, or 80 megahertz. And 80 megahertz takes up a lot of space, and so now it's harder for other neighbors to avoid you. And so if you can use skinnier channels in 5 gigahertz, that also provides your neighbor to have more kind of quiet area as well. So it's like, you know, just like you need a social distance, your Wi-Fi needs a social distance too. And so how do you avoid your neighbors and keep everybody, you know, apart?
Yeah. I can't imagine anyone having a fun conversation with a neighbor about their Wi-Fi.
Right.
That is so hard. I mean, most people are not technical in the first place. Anybody who is, you know, boy, oh boy. Yeah. That's a tough conversation. And
yeah,
it's also funny to see some of the SSIDs in these buildings, you know, where people are clearly fighting with their neighbors via their SSID names.
Yep. One of my coworkers says Wi-Fi is called please use channels 1, 6, or 11. Like, I don't know if that works or not.
When Wi-Fi geeks are your neighbors.
Yep.
Firmware updates for access points. Like, I got to think all of this is good table stakes for if you're going to try and help the staff at home who are struggling with Wi-Fi.
Yeah. All of those things are good. Like, you know, how do you keep them up to date? Mm-hmm. Get them all their firmware updates. We've recently been working on a new product called Insider Agent, and it's just a small little tool that runs on your Windows machine, and it provides you with some basic information like, hey, what channel are you on?
Right.
How's your signal quality? What's your current data rate? Some of those basics that are kind of hard to find on your machine. If we can just tell you, hey, here's your current stats, then this could help you figure out, you know, okay, my signal is just bad. I need to get closer to my access point.
Yeah, just should sort of nail that sort of thing down. Yeah, because you've got a set of software, right? The Channelizer, the Insider, like there's a bunch of different tools that can help folks. They don't have to buy hardware to do this.
Yeah, that's a good point. So Channelizer is our main tool or software that works with WiSpy, which is Spectrum Analyzer. Mm-hmm. And then IPA is made for packet analysis, and it works well with Wireshark. I think you just talked to Laura Chapel a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And IPA works hand-in-hand with Wireshark for capturing Wi-Fi on multiple channels with multiple adapters on Windows, and then you can drill down to specific conversations. You can adjust your time segment that you're looking at, and then you can send that over to Wireshark, and it sends it to Wireshark with a view filter applied, and so you're just looking at those specific packets that you just drilled down to. So IPA is a great tool to work with Wireshark. And then, like you mentioned, we also have Insider, Insider started out as a free Wi-Fi scanner. Like, hey, here's the Wi-Fi networks that are in your area. And it's evolved a lot over the last 12 years. And now it actually has packet capture capability too, if you have a supported adapter. And it does a lot of things to just show you visually what's going on in your Wi-Fi environment, your network, your neighbor's networks. Just really great tool for that quick overview of Wi-Fi. And we do have a free version of that. And so, as far as the IT people in support, you can have your employees install Insider. Insider now has the ability to export a summary of the Wi-Fi environment in a PCAP file. Mm-hmm. And so then you could open that in Wireshark as well. And that would tell you a lot of things. It basically contains a beacon from every access point that you can see. And so it has all the information elements, all the nitty gritty about, you know, your employees' network and all their neighbors' networks and who's stomping on who. And you can just open up that in Insider or Wireshark or whatever your favorite packet analyzer tool is. And that's all available for free.
That's awesome. Yeah. I can imagine remoting into an employee machine, getting Insider set up on them, get that profile done. Now you have something to analyze and start talking about what will make the most difference for them. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the perfect world, it's maybe just a channel change or it's a hardware upgrade, which again, is relatively painless compared to tweaking and tuning a configuration.
Yeah, a lot of times the solution is pretty easy once mm-hmm. you kind of identify the problem. It's just sometimes the visibility into identifying the problem. And so that's one of our main focuses right now is like, how do we help people see where the problem even is?
I just have this vision. It's something I imagine myself doing is like going to an employee's house, sitting in their driveway in my car with a laptop open, connecting up to their Wi-Fi and sort of looking at their environment from outside, you know, maintaining that physical distance still, but tweaking and tuning the internet for them anyway.
Yep, definitely.
That's really an interesting problem.
Yeah, so we're trying to make, well, can we get that same amount of information available to you without having to be in the driveway, right? How do we get that? You know, if they could just install a little tool on their computer and then it uploads some of the diagnostics to, you know, a server where you could see it, or some way that you can get to that and say, oh, I see your network, I understand it, here's your problem, go and do this thing, then, you know, how much would that save, you know, increase productivity? And like you mentioned with Cameron Fuller a couple weeks ago too, just like, how does the IT person help everybody's router get a little bit better configured?
Yeah, just a little better setup.
Yeah, I mean, today, you know, IT people, they're not helping in the office because nobody's in the office, but how do we help everybody be productive from home?
Right.
And a part of that is the Wi-Fi.
We're at the right time now where you got over the fire of everyone at home. They're basically up and running. You've probably done a lot of tweaking and tuning in the office machines. You've offloaded work to the cloud. You know, I bet your servers have never been in a better state right now just because the loads have shifted so much. And now to be able to optimize the work from homers one by one, essentially, or, you know, getting some more information about the different pieces that they're struggling with. It makes sense to be having this conversation right now. Although I think we're going to start seeing some folks going back to work in some locales. The offices are almost ready to open up again.
Yeah. I think we definitely start seeing some shift back to the office. We actually have about 15 employees, and two of them, I think, are going to the office a couple days a week because they don't have a good home office set up. Like, you know, they're in the corner of the bedroom with one tiny little desk with a laptop that they're sharing with their wife, that sort of situation. But, you know, now that we're all working from home, I think we're going to see a lot more continued remote work.
Yeah. And so the Wi-Fi is going to stay important. Like, this is not wasted tuning.
Yep.
They're going to keep using it. Like, it's genuinely a benefit to get your Wi-Fi set up well.
Exactly.
And I had a buddy of mine who's quite technical, actually. He just sort of pinged me and said, I am unhappy with my Wi-Fi setup. What do you recommend? And it's like, well, tell me about your wiring. Because I have 120 Ethernet jacks in my house, but I'm that kind of guy, and I built this house. but you know, he had that classic, you know, bought a town home for, you know, with his little baby, and there's one Ethernet jack that is supplied by the and supported by the ISP, and like exactly what you described, it's in the flipping garage, and oddly enough, no bandwidth in the backyard, so yeah, mesh was necessary. Although, again, you know, you've got, that's a technical person where I said, you know, this AP and these two meshes, one here, one there, bet you'll be good. And he's like, thanks, gone. He'll do it. He'll take it on. Getting that stuff set up with non-technical people who are probably also frustrated. You know, that it's not that simple to get all that stuff set up right. Do you think there's some pre-configuration we could be doing for folks that we actually bring that gear in, set it up, and it's like, okay, now go plug this in?
That's a great thought that I've never thought of.
Yeah, it just hit me.
It's because some of those conversations about like, well, do you want one SSID on both bands or do you want to have different SSIDs? What kind of devices do you have in your house? And, the, you know, how many devices? Who's there? You know, is it husband, wife, you know, two parents, kids? And that could definitely help you do some of that configuration.
Yeah. You know, I hate a double ship. You know, we just did a show on Windows Autopilot with this whole idea of you can have the machine delivered directly, never need to touch it, and it'll configure itself correctly. But for an access point in these circumstances, yeah, I think I'd do a double ship. You know, interesting initiative. I'd run this up to the CFO and say, hey, give me a couple of $1,000 to buy a half a dozen of these for our key people who are struggling the most.
Yeah.
I'm going to help preset them up, create SSIDs they like, passwords they already know, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And have a conversation with each one to understand their landscape a little better. Maybe run a little SSIDer in advance to know what the problems are, and then fire those things out and let them move over to them.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
Wow. I think you'd make a real difference for folks. And, you know, and a long-term benefit, like their Wi-Fi will stay good even when things shift around a bit more.
Yep. And with some of that pre-configuration, you can do all those turn those little knobs that they would never be able to do.
Yeah. And a little bit of tweak and tuning, and then maybe have that remote access set up properly so that you can get back to it and tune it further when it's in place, as long as you can secure it adequately. just getting the firmware set up and the remote access secured properly, like those are hard things to get done remotely. They're a lot easier if you could do them in person.
Definitely. So, yeah. So maybe with those cases, the double ship, it totally makes sense.
Yeah. And it's worth it. And again, so you do a few waves of this and see if you can't, you know, yes, we're working from home. The question is, are we getting any work done from home? Like, this is about starting to get those percentages of productivity back up. You know, we would hope that everyone is at least as productive at home as they're at work, maybe even more productive in some cases. But these are the things that trip that up, that will make this harder.
Definitely. And, you know, when it first started, and everything, you know, Friday you're in the office and Monday you're working from home.
Yeah.
Any connectivity was fine, right?
Yeah.
But now we're to the point where, okay, is it actually good? Or is this sapping, you know, 10-15% of your productivity every day just because you don't have a good connection?
Yeah. Now, there's an ROI there about the struggle over and over and over again every day to do anything. And, you know, it wouldn't take me very long just watching the Zoom calls to see who's always in late, who's you know, constantly pixelated and voice VoIPing and so forth, those kinds of things. That's a person with connectivity problems. You know, maybe we can start addressing that.
Yeah, that actually was part of the reason I started the Insider Agent. I was tinkering with, we were on a team Zoom call and there was like 10 of us. And one guy was just like stuck, pixelated, you know, you tell it just was a horrible connection. And I'm like, okay, is it his Wi-Fi? Is it his ISP? Is, you know, what's going on? Why is his messed up?
Yeah.
And so I've been tinkering with, well, what if everybody on the team had a tool like Insider Agent that's just kind of running and saying, what's your current data rate? What's your current bandwidth? And that was all going to a team page on our cloud that you could just look.
Wow.
And you could see, oh, you know, thumbs up, thumbs down on everybody and what their kind of, what their data rate is and how it's working for them. So I haven't built that page, but that's kind of the essence of where it's going. It's like, oh, what if we could do something like that? What if we have visibility into the rest of the team and how their connectivity actually is right now?
Yeah, it occurs to me I'm talking to the guy who could make that come true.
Yeah.
That I could put these agents out on all those machines and then actually have a console. It's like, you're starting to assess, like, how well will this team collaborate? And part of that is how good is their connectivity so that they can see and hear each other well.
Yep.
That's really brilliant, Ryan. I love everything about that.
Thanks.
Just to take a little twist towards the end of the show, I have talked to some folks that gave up on this and shipped out cellular modems to folks and little MiFi points. And we're like, here, your household bandwidth is for your kids. Use this for your office work. Mm-hmm. If the cell connection's good enough. I don't know if you've run into that, but it's like, that seems to me like the punt. I couldn't fix this, so we changed the criteria entirely.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it's kind of the punt. That cell data gets expensive. And so if you can keep it on the Wi-Fi.
Yeah, not cheap. And it's also constrained. Like, folks are battling over, there's only so much cell bandwidth to go around as well. You better have lots of good signal there. You know, where my place happens to be, the cell reception is bad enough that I actually put a YAG repeater in because I'm that kind of geek.
Oh, yeah.
But that's also $1,000, you know, to get good cell coverage. But I had teenage daughters. They're older than that now. And all they cared about was cell access. So, you know, that was quality of life for me. I improved that signal there, but that very different path. And it is interesting to think there are other ways to go here. It's just a question of how much you're willing to spend and what resources you have available to you.
Yeah. How much you want to spend, what resources, how much time do you have? Yeah. Some of those things. Like, you know, is an emergency need solved today? Then yeah, I guess I'd ship a MiFi. But if you have a little bit of time to work on it, even if you double ship the access point that you're talking about, I mean, that would definitely be cheaper in the long run.
Yeah, that's a money over time thing. And I think we maybe have a little more time as IT folks right now, at this point in the story arc of the pandemic, to do a little more tweaking. And I'm very grateful to you for Insider. That's a great tool, and I'm glad it's available for folks to get a hint on the right things to do. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah, when we built that back in 2007, we started, there just was NetStumbler, and it had a little table, and that's it, and there was no graphical anything. And so we came with Insider. It was the first one that had a graph of, here's 2 megahertz band, and here's how these different networks overlap and kind of show up in the signal strength. And it was so fun to build and kind of see your networks all of a sudden. And ever since, we tried to keep, you know, how do we help people visualize Wi-Fi? Because it's it's this invisible signal. But if we can visualize it with some graphs, well, now we can do something with it. Now we understand what, you know, how they're interacting.
Maybe I'm remembering something else, a triggering old memory. Wasn't it the tool that showed every time the microwave ran, like the Wi-Fi just tanked? Like they, somebody had a leaky microwave, and when it was on, nothing worked.
Channelizer shows that really well.
Yeah, it must have been Channelizer. That's what I'm thinking of.
With the spectrum.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, you can see the Wi-Fi signal, and then the microwave comes on, just and it's just everywhere across 200 gigahertz band.
Yeah.
And just blows it out. And that's why 200 gigahertz band was unlicensed, because it was a junk band. It's like,
yeah,
this is what microwaves use, and therefore nobody's gonna want to use this. This is junk. And then it somehow became unlicensed, and then the Wi-Fi and Bluetooth took off on it. Well, microwaves are still there, still causing problems.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. There's a great question. It's like, so tell me, was anyone using the microwave when you had this problem?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hot pockets. All right. Well, there you go. That's a great one. Yep. Ryan, thanks so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate your insight around this. I know it's something that everybody's challenged by, and you've clearly put years of effort into this, and it's, I think we're all better off for it. Thanks again.
Thank you, Richard.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.